Happy to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, wishing you a happy Thanksgiving. Very thankful that you're with us today on the Ideas Network. Our guest now is Cal Schoonover. He is the author of several articles relating to the Civil War. He has degrees in 19th century military history, concentrating on the American Civil War. And we'll be talking with him about his new book. It's titled Wisconsin at Antietam, The Badger State Sacrifice on America's Bloodiest Day. Cal Schoonover, welcome to the show. Thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Yes, thank you for having me on. It's been great. You know, it sounds great.
Well, I tell you what, how'd you get interested in the Civil War and its history?
Well, actually, I was a very small child back in the 80s, and my parents took my sisters and I to Washington, D.C. My dad was a Vietnam veteran, and he wanted to see the newly erected Vietnam Memorial. So we ended up going out there, and from what I remember, and then being told later on, you know, since I was rather small, that I had a real fascination with the Lincoln Memorial when I was there. And for some reason, I can still see, you know, picture that in my head, you know, it's being so small and just seeing that ginormous statue of Abraham Lincoln. And then we were able to tour Arlington Cemetery and started seeing, you know, all the Civil War soldier graves and such. And my sister ended up getting a rather thick book by Bruce Canton, actually. Mm-hmm. And I remember looking through that throughout the years as the years passed, and my interest in the war just continued to grow, and I've always had an interest in it. And in the late 1980s, Ken Burns' Civil War documentary came out, and then that just totally gripped me on the war, and I just started reading as much as I possibly could.
Well, I read The Red Badge of Courage as a young guy. A very young man, and that got my interest in the Civil War. And so I'm kind of with you a little bit here on this. Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to write about this particular battle, the battle at Antietam, Sharpsburg?
Well, one of the main reasons is because other campaigns in the Civil War, like Gettysburg, has, you know, hundreds and hundreds of books on it. And there really is not a whole lot on Antietam, on the Maryland campaign of 1862. And what I thought was kind of interesting also, and I really, really drew me to it, is, you know, after walking the grounds of Antietam, there's not a single marker dedicated to Wisconsin there. And that right there drew interest to why not, because they played a very important role in the opening hours of that battle, and as well as the Battle of South Mountain, which took place just a few days prior, which is part of the Maryland campaign. I thought that there, you know, definitely, you know, a lot of the, you know, of course, books on the campaign do mention the Iron Brigade and the Third Wisconsin. But they don't really go into a whole lot of detail of what actually took place along the Hagerstown Pike and the Miller's Cornfield. And so that is what I decided that I want to see what I could find. And so I started digging and found lots of letters or several letters, diaries, and some older books that were published from soldiers who had, fought in the war. So I thought that, you know, I'd run with it and see what happened, and it turned into a book. So,
well, it's a really interesting book. You know, just for background, how did Wisconsin react to the Civil War itself? I mean, the opening fire on Fort Sumter created a lot of interest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it did. It got, people from here were obviously paying attention. But what really sparked the interest, though, from the boys from our state was that Illinois, Minnesota, and Michigan, they right away went to sign up for service. When Lincoln called for, you know, X amount of troops after the firing of Fort Sumter, and Wisconsin, you know, was kind of like, trailed behind him a little bit. But after some uproar from people in the city of Madison at that time, Governor Alexander Randall ended up publishing a proclamation asking for people to volunteer as well, because they just didn't want to leave us out. And he received an overwhelming amount of signatures of people who wanted to join up and fight for the cause. Of course, they had no idea that the war was going to last as long as it did. Nobody did. And the initial reaction was is that, you know, there wasn't going to be a whole lot of fighting, if any at all. And, you know, it would be over within a few months, but we know different now.
Yeah, that's for sure. And, of course, the Camp Randall was established in Madison. I wonder about their training and how much training our Wisconsin soldiers got prior to, you know, actually getting into battle.
Yeah, Camp Randall initially was just a fairground. And then they needed a place, a headquarters, so to speak, to start training people. So right away they started, you know, transforming it into a camp. And the initial training that all the enlistees received mainly was proper formation, marching, especially marching with all the gear on. You know, they had to learn that. And, of course, the most important was the loading and firing of their weapons. Numerous times during, you know, they try to put the soldiers under duress as much as possible, knowing the fact that, you know, later on in battle, there'd be some guys that were killed or their muskets would be found later with three or four bullets rammed down the barrel. They never fired one time. They were just so scared. He just kept reloading. So that was something that a lot of the guys were trained on. But, you know, according to our new standard of training nowadays, they didn't receive hardly anything. You know, it was mainly for show almost, as you would think, because again, the war wasn't supposed to last that long. So,
yeah. And yet our Iron Brigade was a very prestigious group the war went on.
Yes, they were a phenomenal group of fighting men. The Iron Brigade initially consisted of the 2nd Wisconsin, the 6th Wisconsin, and the 7th and the 19th Indiana. And they got their name at the Battle of South Mountain after basically having no instructions on whatsoever of what they were supposed to be doing there. They were just placed on the national road watching Turner's Gap on South Mountain there. And the next thing you know, they become under artillery fire and now they're engaged in battle. But they held their own. They lost a lot of casualties, and they ended up holding. But you know, they took a severe hit though. But General McClellan, though, George McClellan, from a distance was observing them and thought that they fought like iron, and so they got the name Iron Brigade.
Yeah, it got really, really interesting. And, you know, just to sort of set the stage for Antietam, and you're doing that a little bit with South Mountain, but just thinking even in a broader context, the war for the Union at the time of the Battle of Antietam or just prior to it was not always the greatest.
No, not at all. It wasn't. Our guys were, again, going back to the training, you know, they did what they could, but again, you know, they didn't really think that it was going to last as long. So the training, of course, was not top notch like it would be now. And they, you know, consistently lost fight after fight. Prior to their first engagements, a lot of the Antietam campaign, I should say, a lot of the guys from Wisconsin, you know, they took part in like the first and second battles of Bull Run, where they were annihilated. So they just kept working more with the drillings and experience on how to fight. And, you know, they ended up becoming a pretty good fighting unit, especially when Brigadier General John Gibbon took over. He really put the screws to them, and you know, he really got those guys in shape to fight, and they put up a heck of a fight too. So.
Yeah, and you know, they were plagued. The whole Union Army, I think, was plagued by poor generalship. And so it was good that the Wisconsin troops got a chance to be under somebody who was a better general when it came to organizing and actually fighting.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, you had the head of the head of the army. You know, from the very start with Irvin McDowell to, you know, to George McClellan. And, you know, each one of them, you know, had their own form of incompetence, so to speak. McClellan especially, as they say, always had a case of the slows. You know, he didn't want to fight ever. And, you know, if he came up with a figure of the Army of Northern Virginia having, you know, 50,000 men, you know, McClellan would, you know, increase that number to, you know, over 150,000, you know, and he just exaggerated numbers, you know, and he just would rather sit around and watch and engage. And finally, you know, Lincoln got on him, and then here we had a fight. You know, he had intelligence information that, you know, what Lee was doing in Maryland. So, you know, that did aid him. And, that's how that ended up taking place. But he still failed to end the war right there, though. And I don't necessarily know the war would have ended right there anyways had he even pursued him, because there was some fighting afterwards, but, you know, there was still more to go. Lee still had more fight in him. So
Lee, you know, was thinking about the overall strategy. What was Lee trying to do at that point?
Well, the reason for, you know, Lee actually invaded the north, you know, anything above Maryland, you know, he actually did that twice. He did it in September of 1862, and he did it again in late June and July of 1863, which culminated in the Gettysburg. But the reason for his invasion the first time was for political reasons. A lot of it was. And then the second one was mainly was because his troops were in badly need of supplies, mainly food. The southern region was dramatically damaged by the large amount of troops that they had. You know, the livestock were gone. The, you know, cornfields were, you know, trampled on and eaten up. And, you know, so they needed new supplies. And the only way to do that was to move into country that they haven't been in yet, which was the north. So, and hopefully, you know, Lee's initial thought for both times he invaded the north was to cut the Army of the Potomac off of, you know, out of communication with Washington and sack Washington, hoping for a, you know, a force of a peace offering, basically, if they were able to do that, capture the capital. But, you know, luckily, though, for us, both times he did that, he failed.
Yeah, and that clash at South Mountain, you mentioned that, and it had an effect. Maybe talk a bit more about the South Mountain and also how it affected the Battle of Antietam.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of Lee's commanders, it's still not completely clear yet, dropped Lee's orders on dividing his army into going through the passes. And to continue on, you know, to try to sack Washington and such. So McClellan had that had that intelligence information. So, you know, he pursued him, and so McClellan ordered his army to advance through the three gaps over South Mountain, which was Turner's, Crompton's, and Fox. And once they were doing that, you know, then they clashed with the Confederate Army there. The first corps, which was under General Hooker, and the Iron Brigade was part of the first corps. They were set to fight at Turner's Gap, and mainly the Wisconsin Brigade there. They were really poorly instructed on what their orders were. You had Meade off to the, I believe it was to the east of them, fighting in a general engagement, but you had Gibbon's brigade, which was the Iron Brigade, just kind of sitting on the National Road protecting that, not really with a whole lot of clear instructions on you know, what exactly they were supposed to be doing. And, you know, whatever little bit of downtime they had, the soldiers would take advantage of it, of course. And while they were, you know, waiting for further instruction, they became under artillery fire, and full engagement took place. And Wisconsin was unfortunately hit pretty hard there. And they managed to hold the ground, but there was really no win or loss there. If you're looking at number of casualties, Wisconsin suffered a heck of a lot heavier than what the Confederate troops did during that.
Yeah. And then it was just actually not that far from South Mountain was Sharpsburg at Antietam.
Yep.
And maybe just talk about what happened to our Wisconsin. You know, first there were a lot of soldiers involved. Wisconsin, of course, the Iron Brigade was part of it. But what happened to our Wisconsin fighters during the Antietam?
During the opening, after South Mountain, you know, they continued in pursuit of Lee's army. Well, then they ended up clashing at Thomas Sharpsburg. As we call it, the northern guys call it Antietam, named after the creek. So what ended up taking place there was, you know, is that the General Hooker's First Corps ended up taking moving to the north once they got into Sharpsburg, and setting up camp around what they call the North Woods area. And just to the south of him he through his spyglass, he saw, you know, a big white building, which is now called the Dunker Church. And that whole there was like left of the Confederate Army, and it was managed by Stonewall Jackson. And, that was not going to be an easy fight. And, of course, not necessarily knowing that at the time, but the exact time the battle opened is up for debate by numerous historians. The clearest answer I could really get was as soon as basically they could start seeing silhouettes moving, they started shooting at each other.
And you know what surprised me so much was I read through, you know, I'm reading the Wisconsin, you're writing about the Wisconsin roll through that cornfield and Miller's cornfield and I'm kind of almost breathless. And you'd say in the book it started at 6, and then it's like you mention at about the time they were finishing up, it was 8:30. 2.5 hours went by, and I couldn't believe the carnage that took place in that short of a time. It's just absolutely amazing, and you do such a nice job of describing the action that took place during that time. And in the end, how many, I've forgotten now, how many were left of the Wisconsin, the Iron Brigade? We lost so many men.
Yeah, there was initially, you know, for each of the regiments, like the 2nd Wisconsin started with 1,051. At the end of that, there was over 315 lost. The 6th Wisconsin, you know, started out with 1,045, and by the time that was over, there was over 357 gone. And the 7th Wisconsin started out with 973, and they lost 424. They lost massive numbers in this fight, and it was just unbelievable on the totality of them.
It was indeed almost impossible to imagine. And you know, my wife and I about 20 years ago or so went to Antietam. And actually stayed overnight there and slept in the same house that James Longstreet slept in during the battle. But walk those grounds, and they're beautiful grounds. But you have to remember the bravery, but also the terrible loss to our country from that battle. And we have such a short time today. How do we get, Cal? How do we get copies of your book, Wisconsin and at Antietam?
Well, it's available at pretty much any regular or any bookseller. Amazon carries it. Barnes & Noble carries it. If anybody is listening in the Janesville area, Book World would have it. I know Books A Million in the Janesville Mall or online you can buy it from. It's available pretty much anywhere where you would normally find books.
Well, I tell you what, I want to thank you so much for writing the book and for being with us today. Appreciate it very much. Cal Schoonover, his book, Wisconsin at Antietam, The Badger State Sacrifice on America's Bloodiest Day.
Thank you.
Thank you.